It is just about 25 minutes after the hour on a Transcendent Tuesday. One of the things that makes it a Transcendent Tuesday is Don Clark. Donna, biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, a good friend of the station, and the only resident scientist we have on staff here. And thank you for helping us transcend, that is, rising above the small stuff to talk about some of the deeper stuff here. And today, no exception, we're talking about the Great Flood. There was one, only one, right?
There was only one Great Flood. Mm. That is a worldwide flood. And it's interesting, of course, that, you know, Genesis records the flood in Genesis chapter 7. And talks about the waters prevailing upon the earth, and all the high hills and the mountains were covered, and basically covered up about 45 to 50 feet above the highest point on the earth at that time. And
you say that Genesis isn't science, but that's pretty specific.
Yeah, very specific. You know, sometimes Genesis and the Bible, for that matter, is very, very specific, even giving the day that the flood occurred and the year that it occurred and this type of thing. So we could go back and say, okay, the flood happened here. And it actually gives us a lot more information, which is useful. And it is one of those biblical stories, if you will, that isn't a fictitious story. Obviously, it's a factual story. And it gives us the reason for the flood and why the flood occurred in the first place. And, who basically caused the flood to happen? And that, of course, was God himself. And, then you have Noah and his family were the only 8 people who were saved from the wrath of God upon the earth because men's hearts were continuously evil. We learn, obviously, in chapter 6 and chapter 7. So, this is a very important event, in my mind at least, for Christians and for Jews as well, because one, it's a historic event, and two, it shows that God's wrath will only, his mercy will only live, hold out for so long. And at some point in time, it kind of runs out, and then God's wrath is poured out upon the earth. Now, the good thing is that we learn later in Genesis that God will not cause another global flood upon the earth, but we learn in Revelation how he will cause some problems on the earth, and especially those people who do not ever want to believe in him. And again, their hearts will become continuously evil as they were at the time of the flood. But be that as it may, how do we know that the flood actually exists, happened? What evidence do we have? Well, we have all kinds of geological evidence. For example, 73%, as is in this article, states that 73% of Earth's crust is covered with sedimentary rock. Well, you can't have sedimentary rock unless it settles out of water. So that says that at least 73% of the Earth was covered, and we know from the record, of course, the whole Earth was covered. You have such things as, we can look in this country, for example, you go west, young man, and you get in the desert, you see layers upon colored rocks and cement, and you say, oh my goodness, this looks like there was water here at one time. You've got petrified trees and all kinds of stuff that are there at various points. And the only way that you can get a petrified tree is if it was submerged in water at some point in time that had a lot of minerals in it. And so we have evidence upon evidence. And of course, there's the Grand Canyon and all the canyons as you go west, you run into the canyons, Bryce Canyon and Grand Canyon. They multiple layers of sediment, sedimentary rock. There's plenty of geological evidence. And then you've got paleontological evidence as well, from the fact that we've got millions of buried bones and fossils, for example, that were buried at the time of the flood. Of course, most of them are sea, but we do have animals as well. We've got places, for example, in New Zealand, that's called Whale Mountain. Why is it called Whale Mountain? Because on top of the mountain, there are whale bones. And you would say, well, you know, that had to be covered. The whale certainly didn't crawl up the mountain in order to die up there. So that had to be covered with water.
You've mentioned another factor here, and that is a fossil has to be created. Now, fossil is a mineralized shape of a plant, leaf or an animal. It's not the animal or the leaf itself, because the original biological material has been replaced by minerals. So you're saying it had to have been buried in a silt-laden water or mud in order to become a fossil, correct?
Well, that type of fossil, yes. So it had to be, and the most important fact of that about that is it had to be buried very, very quickly, and not linger. You can't have a fish, for example, die, a dead fish floats on the surface of the water, and that. It takes a while for the other fish around it to eat it, as well as for bacteria and other things to eat the flesh. And then, with some time, the skeleton will, fall down to the ocean bottom. That is not what we find. What we find is whole fish. And in some cases, there's the famous fossil of a big fish eating a smaller fish. That was trapped in this rushing mud from a tsunami, tidal wave, if you will, that buried those two at the time of the big fish trying to eat the littler fish. And so these had to be buried very, very quickly and had to essentially be encapsulated in the mud, which later turned to rock as the water receded, and then we find them thousands, sometimes thousands of years later, and voila, you've got a fossil perfectly formed. And of course we've got leaves of all kinds of different types of trees.
So the abundance itself of fossils testifies to a cataclysmic event, something quick, sudden, and catastrophic.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It had to be quick. This wasn't a slow process. It had to be quick. So and we find these things, all over the world. If you go, for example, from the ocean inward, you'll find that the sedimentary rock layer is quite thick, and at the shore, 6,000 feet, for example, thick, and then as you move inland, it tapers off, as you would expect if you had tsunami after tsunami. Huge tsunamis causing their waves in the water rushing across the land. And if you can imagine these various mud layers that have been caused with this rushing water, they would be then depositing over the over the earth throughout the
let me ask you another question then, because you implied a few seconds ago that there's a different kind of fossil. If we have dinosaur bones and dinosaur fossils way inland, like through Wyoming and Montana and up into Canada, where many the remnants of dinosaurs have been found, could that have been caused by tsunamis or the flood, or was that a different kind of fossil?
No. Those, because you have the whole bones, it just... It doesn't, not only bones, but, we know now that, excuse me, you have tissue in these...
soft tissues, yeah.
Buried, in these buried parts of the dinosaurs where you can actually see cells. And you can actually find fragments of DNA and other types of matter that, can only come from a living animal, of course. And so, therefore, it disproves that these things are millions and millions of years old, but have to be recent, and certainly within the time frame of the global flood, burying them would be a time acceptable for the material that's found within, within the bones or the...
So that's evidence of a young Earth, is it not?
It's evidence, yes. It's evidence of a young Earth. It's evidence of, dinosaurs lived not that long ago, 4,500 years ago, and probably beyond that, because the other question that always comes up is, were there dinosaurs after the flood? And the answer is, well, of course there were, because, Noah, it took at least two of each kind of animal, as described in Genesis, and the dinosaurs would have been, part of those. Now, the thing about the dinosaurs, or the terrible lizards, as the word means, is that perhaps these lizards didn't live, didn't grow quite as big as they did before the flood, because we know from Genesis, again, that the earth was perfect for living things, man in particular. And so the climate around the earth was more conducive for life than it was pre-flood, than it was post-flood. And so these animals grew, a lizard doesn't it doesn't die necessarily. It just gets older and bigger with time. If there is not a food source like they had pre-flood, which there wouldn't have been initially, then they probably would have hung around. And of course, we've got the legends of, in England, of the knights going out and fighting these dragons. And over in China, they celebrate with dragons. Mm-hmm. So there had to be post-flood dinosaurs.
A cultural memory of dragons.
Yes, exactly. Not only a cultural memory, but the dragons were real up until, medieval times, until finally man slaughtered them all. And so we might find some dinosaurs, for example, in the Congo. In the Congo or remote places of the earth where man hasn't killed them yet. Mm-hmm. So, be that as it may, we've got all kinds of evidence, of course, for the flood, but there is yet another form of evidence that we can talk about, and that is extra biblical evidence for a flood story, if you will, in cultures from around the world. We find flood stories, in Pre the program, we talked about the story of the Gilgamesh, which was the probably one of the oldest stories about the flood. Now, it doesn't parallel exactly, but it does say that there was a good man, for example, that survived the flood, and that it was a global flood, and other parallels that there was this good man and his family that were saved.
And that story predates Genesis, correct?
It predates the written part of Genesis. Of course, we know that the Israelites or the descendants of Shem, who then turned into the Israelites or the Jews, they had this particular characteristic of recording events. In verbal fashion at first. So that's how we know about, creation, is because it was handed down, passed down, for example, by verbal stories. And going back to our theory of devolution, of course, man was much, much smarter then. And he and the woman memorized these stories exactly. As they were given to man, or in this case, as they were given to Adam and Eve, and would have passed down the creation story, so they would have passed down the flood story, until Moses came along and said, "You know what? We're going to write this stuff down." And so, he writes it down and finally makes a recording, a written recording of it, because our minds weren't as crisp as they were at the beginning of our creation. So, but be that as it may, flood stories that were recorded, and some, verbal, and then finally written down. We have, for example, the Caimala tribe of northern Colombia that has the water grew higher and higher until all the earth was covered, and a single family remained alive. Well, that is certainly reminiscent of the flood as recorded in Genesis. And we've got Mayan ancestry, and there's the Indian tribe in Virginia has a narrative, for example, about the flood, and seven or eight in a canoe, a giant great canoe. And some of these stories have animals on the boat or the vessel, and some don't. There is actually a recent book that was published by Nick Liguori, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, called "The Echoes of of Ararat." Echoes of Ararat, and he has collected all of these stories that he could find, and put them in a book. So if folks are interested, they can look up his book, and he's got 300 such stories from around the world. So it seems like every culture has some sort of flood story that would again corroborate, if you will, the fact that the flood actually happened, and the fact that man must have originated from one group of people way back in history sometime, that they would carry such a story.
And by the way, there's a link in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. If you click on that, it'll take you to the article from Institute for Creation Research that we're looking at. And there you can nail down that book and even link to it and find the book and get it and read it if you're so of a mind to do so. So brokenroadradio.com, that link in the chat window is for you as a listener to go ahead and use and find. And there's some stories in particular, and here's a story I related to you, I think, a long time ago as we were talking about some of these legends, or some would call them myths, but if you take the entirety of the evidence, they can't be myths. They may be colorful stories after being told and retold for eons and eventually written down, but you've got to figure there's this, because of the commonality, for example, a flood that covered all of the earth and one family surviving, and many of the stories include animals in their, in the story. The one that catches my attention is from China, of all places. In China, there is a story called, the name of the surviving man is Nuwa, N-U-W-A. And they talk about the four pillars on the earth upholding heaven were broken down. That's similar to Genesis 6:11. The earth was corrupt before God. The whole habitable world was destroyed by an unstoppable flood, the Chinese story goes. Well, God destroyed all life on the face of the earth in the Genesis story. The nine provinces, the whole land, were split apart literally in the Chinese story. In Genesis chapter 8, the fountains of the deep rent upheaval in the earth in the original language. Nuwa alone saved the world when he patched the heavens is the Chinese story. The Genesis version, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And it even goes down to the Chinese symbol for boat. You know, they use pictograms. They're pictures of words, not literally how you pronounce the word, but you would look at it and you would recognize the symbol as meaning boat. But if you translate the parts of the pictogram, it means eight people and a vessel.
Yes.
How might these stories have reached China?
Well, obviously, so this has to deal with, the migration of the peoples after the flood. We know that, of course, there were eight people on on Noah's ark, God's ark, really, for Noah and his family and the animals. When they came out of the ark, we learn later in Genesis, of course, that peoples did not, God told Noah again, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And the peoples then gathered in one place. They gathered in the plain of Shinar, which was not that far from Ararat in the Middle East. And they then began to build for themselves a tower reaching up to heaven. And hence we have the restart of evil on the world again. And I don't have time to go into it, today, but maybe we can take it up at another time, that Nimrod was the fellow who was basically stirring people up and saying, worship me and I will take care of all of your needs. I am so great that let's build a tower up into heaven so that I might reach up into heaven. And basically, he's saying he's going to become like a god. Well, we know who also said that. And so he's mimicking, Satan and Lucifer what Lucifer said in Isaiah 14. He's now bringing evil back into the world and having people turning. He was a great hunter, but he was a great hunter of men, turning the hearts of men away from God and towards him. Well, we know the story of the Tower of Babel, that God confuses the languages, and then from there, man spreads across the earth. And
doing what God had ordered to begin with.
Exactly. Mm. So if you don't obey God, he's going to basically force you to do what he says, that is to, and he did this as a merciful act. Everything that God does is for mercy. I mean, because otherwise man would have been in the same boat, not to,
Is that a pun?
Yeah, a pun. Yeah, no. He would have been in the same situation that every thought was continuously evil, and then God would have had to wipe them out again. But, you know, fortunately for the descendants of Shem, who were the good, you know, the descendants of Shem kind of stayed around the Middle East, and you know, eventually that's where Abram and Abraham come from, and there we go. We have God's chosen people coming out of the descendants of Shem. But the rest of the people then migrate. They migrate, you know, eastward, eventually getting into the Asias. They, of course, Africa and up into Europe. You know, the various sons and daughters of the patriarchs, Noah's sons, if you will, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The Japhites went north into Europe. The Hamites went south into Africa and also headed towards India and over into the Asian part. And then, of course, you've got peoples migrating, but they all migrated from basically the Tower of Babel, that region.
So they would have carried with them the flood story.
Absolutely. They would have had the flood story. They wouldn't have been that far, that many generations away from the actual event. And it would have been quite evident for, you know, I mean, quite fresh in their minds, for example, what had happened to the earth and why it had happened. And many of these flood stories, by the way, carry the theme that the reason for the flood was that man sinned. And it was because of man's wickedness, and so therefore this terrible tragedy happened upon man. You would have thought that that theme would have been enough for man to seek God and to seek after, you know, his mercy and to, you know, follow after God, but apparently it wasn't quite enough.
Hmm. Now, wouldn't there have been, since it was a global event, you would assume that cultures in various parts of the world not known to the biblical writers would have had their own local flood stories as well. So as they encountered migrants from the Middle East, they would have had this in common, would they not?
Well, all the migrants were from the Middle East. All the migrants around the world were from the Middle East. Oh, you mean later in life when
well, no, now come to think of it, no, you're right, because I'm thinking people would have survived the flood in other areas of the world, but that's not true.
No, of course
humanity
not
was white. So the only place that story could have come from was from migrants from the Middle East.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Aha. Yeah. Which accounts for the similarities in the stories.
Exactly. Right.
Well,
so it also, you know, validates, if you will, the flood story. Not that each story is exactly the same, because, you know, they're not, as you've already pointed out, they've added their own little colorful language to it. But some of it is quite remarkable and parallels to the original Genesis story.
Well, I can imagine those stories being told around campfires all around the world for generations and taking on variations, and each teller tried to outdo the last time they heard the story, and so changes get woven into it. But it's a marvelous tapestry of the story of a great flood. And combined with the geological and paleontological, that stuff, that evidence, and the Bible itself, how can you doubt? You can question, but how can you doubt?
Yeah.
Don Clark, biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their website to you. That's creationmoments.com, and there you will find quite a library of DVDs and articles and blogs and information that supports the biblical story of creation, a place you don't see around too often anymore. Information you don't get a lot of places elsewhere, but you can visit creationmoments.com and take your pick. Recommend that there's recommended reading there at creationmoments.com. Don Clark's in Garden Valley, Texas, and Don, have a good week. Enjoy the weather. Hope the grapes are doing fine, and we'll see you soon, okay?
Okay, sounds great. You folks have a great week as well.
Thank you, Don. Bye-bye.
Thanks much, Don.
Everybody.